All right, good morning, good morning. Today we are going to talk about probably one of the most familiar stories, especially out of the book of Daniel, probably in the Bible. All the kids know this story. We've all known this story for most of our lives if we've been in church. So I'm probably not going to share a whole lot, biblically speaking, that's going to say much to you guys. Most of what I'm going to have for you guys, like the last couple times, has been historical things. So give us some context for where we're at here. We are in the reign of the Medo-Persian Empire at this point. The Babylonians are no longer in control of their lands. We have shifted from the head of gold into the torso of silver from Nebuchadnezzar's dream. We'll see next week this same progression is reiterated in Daniel's vision of the four beasts. So the year is 539 BC. Medo-Persian army has infiltrated Babylon, killed Belshazzar, the king regent, and the rule of Babylon is now entrusted to Darius. Now, like we said a couple weeks ago, the word king is very broad. He was actually not the king, he was the governor of sorts over the Babylonian area. So Cyrus was the king of the Persians. Darius was given the full authority of this province of a quickly expanding Medo-Persian Empire. So what we find out historically is that he was also previously, before the downfall of Babylon, he was the ruler in Syria and Phoenicia as well. So with that, just to give us a little bit of context as to who Darius is a little bit, I will pray and we will start going through this. So Father, we thank you for your word. Father, we thank you for this time together. And Father, we thank you for your sovereignty and your will. And as we see in this story that we all know so well, Father, that you had Daniel in your hand. You took care of him. You helped him survive the insurmountable odds of the lion's den, same as we learned a few weeks ago from his three friends in the furnace. So, Father, what we need to understand and what we need to learn from this is that, Father, when we are yours, we are unstoppable. If it is in your will, we will not be stopped. So, Father, just thank you. Thank you for your will. Thank you for your sovereignty. Thank you again for your word. So be with us as we go through this. Father, help us to all glean something from this. And, Father, just help us to apply it to our lives. And just for the sake of your church, let this be edifying to each and every one of us. We ask all these things in your name. Amen. So I gave you a little bit of context. Who was Darius the Mede? According to historical accounts, there was no Darius in this position. This was a very short time period that he was in place, only a matter of a few years. And we see that there was nobody in this position, historically speaking. The only place that somebody named Darius was in this position at this time is in the book of Daniel. Now, there are people that confuse him with the Persian emperor Darius, who will later be, in about 20 years, who will become the leader of the Persians after Cyrus. But Daniel mentions a different lineage in his book, and we find out that according to a lot of historical accounts, this kingdom of Babylon, like I said, was absorbed in under an emperor or a governor by the name of Gubaru, so Subaru with a G instead of an S, spelled the same way. He's entrusted this by King Cyrus. He becomes the governor of this newly acquainted province. He was likely already the acting governor of these other regions, and then he received the kingdom of Babylon. And as we read there in verse 31 of last chapter, it says that he received the kingdom. So we see that he didn't conquer it, he didn't claim it, he received it. So he got it from someone else. So Cyrus gave him this power. Again, like I said, he was likely this acting governor of these other places, which would, as we get into the word, explain why he needed 120 satraps over this area, set over, and it says the whole kingdom. So, we'll start with verse 1 and 2 here. It says, it pleased Darius to set over the kingdom 120 satraps to be over the whole kingdom, and over these three governors, of whom Daniel was one, that the satraps might give account to them so that the king would suffer no loss. Now, like I said, 120 satraps, that's a lot of people for one city, even as big of a city as Babylon was. So this was probably over the whole kingdom, like it says there at the end of verse 1. So most of these guys were probably out farther than just in the city of Babylon. There in verse 2, when it says that Daniel was one, that word one really kind of implies that Daniel was the first or the head. So Daniel was probably of the three of them, Daniel was probably the most prominent also. So each of these three men were set over a region, and under each of them were about 40 men, simple math. So it says, then this Daniel distinguished himself above the governors and satraps because an excellent spirit was in him, and the king gave thought to setting him over the whole realm. The king was saying, this guy's doing such a good job, the king was thinking of setting him over the whole realm. Now, was that Darius? Was that Cyrus? We don't know. Again, the words are both very synonymous with one another. So the governors and the satraps sought to find some charge against Daniel concerning the kingdom, but they could find no such charge or fault because he was faithful. Nor was there any error or fault found in him. Daniel is the biblical example of being above reproach. The perfect example of that. Then these men said, we shall not find any charge against him unless we find it against him concerning the law of his God. So these governors and satraps thronged before the king. Again, Daniel is the perfect example of being above reproach. We saw this last week when the queen made evident in her recommendation of him that this guy is a good dude. This guy, he knows what he's talking about. He's got a love for God. His reputation preceded him, quite literally. He was a man who was faithful to God, but he was also faithful to his worldly rulers as well. He was a man of distinction. So it says right there in verse 3 that he distinguished himself above all the other governors and satraps because of his excellent spirit. He distinguished himself in a short amount of time. Now, this story is likely, like I said, Darius was only in this position for somewhere between 3 to 4 years. This is probably in the first 1 or 2 years of Darius being in place. So Daniel has already distinguished himself, probably because of the story that they heard when they overtook Babylon. They probably were like, oh, okay, well, this guy is somebody that we can trust. So, reasonably speaking, for a people that were not God-believing people, his contemporaries became envious. He was somebody who had distinguished himself with the highest power in their known world. And instead of putting in the work for themselves, to be better themselves, to distinguish themselves, they decided, you know what, let's just get rid of the guy that's making us all look bad. And I don't know if you guys have ever experienced, I used to tell my kids this all the time, you don't want friends that are going to be like crabs in a bucket. If you've ever seen crabs in a bucket, as soon as one gets to the point where he's about breached and climbed out of the bucket, another one is like, oh, he's almost got it. Let me climb over him to get through. And he pulls the other one back in. We, as Christians, we should be the absolute opposite of that. We should be encouraging people. We should be helping others succeed. And we should be thriving off of the fact that we have helped somebody else succeed. These guys had that opposite thought. And they were like, we're going to get rid of this guy because he's making us look bad. We don't want to do what we need to do to look good. We just don't want this guy looking better than we do. So let's get rid of him. So they make up this lie. And they say, so they came before the king and said, King Darius, live forever. All the governors of the kingdom, the administrators and satraps, the counselors, the advisors, have consulted together to establish a royal statute and to make a firm decree that whoever petitions any god or man for 30 days except you, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions. Now, O king, establish the decree and sign the writing so that it cannot be changed according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, which does not alter. Therefore, King Darius signed the written decree. It says they thronged. So the word throng implies that it was not only a large number of them that were present, but it implies that they formed their plan and then rushed in to see Darius. You get the sense that this was probably somewhat chaotic. They're scrambling in. When we were growing up, we had a trampoline at our house, and so all of my cousins wanted to come to our house because we had a trampoline and they didn't. And in the summertime, we thought it was a great idea to put the sprinkler underneath because it's fun. And then you can play and jump on trampoline and you can stay cool because you've got water spraying on you. And my cousin and I, being boys and young and thinking that it was a great idea, we were like, hey, can we bring the dish soap out there so that we can make this thing slippery, because it'll be really fun. So you can imagine the same kind of thing, like you've got people that had this great idea, and they go clamoring into the king, and they're like, hey, we've got this awesome idea. And the king's like, well, what's your idea? It's like, we think you should do this. And you get almost the same feel to it, that like these guys just, oh, we have a great idea. And they go clamoring into him like, hey, guess what? We've got this awesome idea. So they go in and they appeal to his ego, and they're like, hey, we want you to sign this decree that says that they can only worship you. They can only reach out and pray. And it says there that they want him to only be petitioned to him. And we see this. You can almost feel Darius being like, oh man, that is a great idea, which was not the case when we went and told my mom that we wanted to put dish soap on trampoline. She was like, that sounds awful. You guys are going to hurt yourselves. And we're like, whatever. We don't pay the insurance. You guys will be fine. A broken arm's cool when you're a kid. Right, Grant? So the king signs this decree. And you get this impression with the wording here. So they rush this along. They're like, okay, well, we've got this idea. And before you change your mind, like, here, hurry up, sign it. Like, we've already wrote it out for you. Here, just sign this so we can keep this going. And there in verse 8 it says, so that it cannot be changed according to the law of the Medes and the Persians. Now, in this time, the law was that if the king signed anything into decree, that even the king could not change it. And they knew this. This was their loophole that they were looking at. And they figured this out, and they're like, man, if you hurry up and sign this, like, it's not going to, you don't have to worry about it. Like, it's taken care of. But they appeal to this guy with, hey, this is a great idea, and here it is. And you feel this, like, rush to it when you read those verses. Then verse 10, it says, now Daniel knew that the writing was signed. Daniel knew this happened. He knew that he didn't agree to this. He knew that when they came in verse 7 and said all the governors, that he was not present for that. They made this decision without him. They did this and chose not to involve him. Does Daniel go and appeal to the king about this in any way? No. It says Daniel knew what had happened. So what did he do? He went home. He went in the upper room, and he did what he does every day, three times a day. He went up, he opened his windows, and he knelt towards Jerusalem, and he prayed to his God the way that he always did, the way that he had done forever. He did not care that the king had signed this, and he probably had the same words for it that we see his friends had said years ago. It says, you know, if you're going to do this, then go ahead and do it. But know that either my God is going to save us, or we haven't bowed to you. We've done what we're supposed to do. We've done our part. We have stayed faithful to our God the way that we wanted to stay faithful to our God and the way that he wants us to. He knelt down on his knees three times that day and prayed and gave thanks before God, as was his custom since early days. Daniel doesn't let this affect him. He doesn't say, oh, well, it's time to keep the windows closed for the next 30 days. It's 30 days. It's easy. And we're like, we see things like that, and we think, like, oh, well, you know, we could just keep to ourselves for 30 days. We just hide it. It'll be okay. Maybe we'll just not do it as the same way we always did. I'll stay inside in a quieter, more private place and do this. Nope. Daniel opens his windows and does it just as loud and proud as he always did. Then these men assembled and found Daniel praying and making supplication before his God. They're sitting there. I didn't have binoculars, but they're probably sitting there waiting, watching, like, oh, we've seen him do this for years now. We know exactly where he's going to be. We know when he's going to do it. We're going to sit and we're going to wait and we're going to catch this guy doing this. And they do, because Daniel doesn't change. Daniel stays doing what Daniel does best, and that is praying and staying faithful to his God. So again, we see these men go clamoring in to the king. Hey, guess what? We found this guy that he's doing exactly what you told us not to do. And here he is. But they lead in with this. Didn't you sign this decree? Have you not signed a decree that every man who petitions any god or man within 30 days except you, O king, shall be cast into the lion's den? Like, that's kind of a loaded question. Like, hey, didn't you do this? Like, that was you, right? You signed that? This is okay. And the king answered and said, this is true, according to the law and the Medes of Persians, which does not alter. He agrees. He says, hey, guys, I did, and we can't change that. We see this disgust from these people in the words that they say here. And it says, so they answered and said before the king, that Daniel, who is one of the captives from Judah. Now, Daniel's in his 80s. At this point, this has been 65 years ago, almost 70 years ago, that they captured these people, and they still identify him as one of these captives of Judah. It's not Daniel, the guy that has been a great leader. Daniel, the guy who has distinguished himself, they come with this hatred for this guy. And that Daniel, who is one of the captives of Judah, who does not show due regard to you, O king, for the decree that you signed, but makes his petition three times a day. Like, we didn't just catch him once. We know he's doing it three times a day. You get this almost this feeling of like this group of people that like bursts into the king and like they're tattling on one of their friends that did something that they know they're not supposed to do. And it's weird sounding to say that, but the way that they describe him and the way that the sense that you get from this is that they were just chomping at the bit to go do this. Like, well, I just cannot wait to catch this guy doing this because we just want to get rid of him so bad. Again, this decree was for 30 days. This was temporary. This wasn't even, they didn't even sign this in as a permanent thing. This was 30 days. Like I said, how easy would it be for us to say, well, you know, it's 30 days. I could change the way that I do things for 30 days, and I just don't want to get caught and I'll change how I do things for 30 days, and then I'll go back to the way that I was. We try to constitute our unfaithfulness with past faithfulness. We say, well, you know, I've been faithful for this long, and like God will understand. He'll be okay with the fact that I'm doing this. You know, there's a certain weird situation here. This is happening. This is something different. Like, he'll be okay with it. Not Daniel. We see his past faithfulness did not mean that he was okay with being unfaithful in a moment. If anything, all it did was it was just practice for him to be even more faithful and an even greater display of that faithfulness towards God. That should be encouraging to us because we should be that way. Because we should understand, just like with Daniel and just like with his three friends, that no matter what, when God has a plan for us, that's the way it's going to go. And as long as we stay faithful to him, he's going to stay faithful to us. Verse 14, and the king, when he heard these words, was greatly displeased with himself and set his heart on Daniel to deliver him. And he labored till the going down of the sun to deliver him. So the king dismisses the crowd. They've come and they've given their conviction of Daniel. And there's a sentencing there in the decree. And the king sits down and he racks his brain. He's like, how can I fix what I've done? Like, what can I do? Like, I like this guy. This is one of my friends. This is somebody that I respect and I care about. What have I done? And he tries to come up with something. But what we need to understand also about the Persian custom and law is that when someone is convicted and sentenced, you are to exact that punishment before the sun goes down on that same day. So once somebody is sentenced, that punishment is exacted that same day. So the king tries to buy as much time as he can. He says, you know what? You guys leave me alone. I need some time to myself to figure this out. And he says, he set his heart on Daniel to deliver him, and he labored till the going down of the sun to deliver him. He had a timeline. He says, I've got to figure something out before the sun goes down, and because if I can, man, I can save Daniel. Darius held on as long as he could. And then the crowd reappears and approaches Darius. So the king gave the command, and they brought Daniel and cast him into the lion's den. Sorry, let's go back to verse 15. Then these men approached the king and said to the king, "Know, O king, that it is the law of the Medes and the Persians that no decree or statute which the king establishes may be changed. Remember, you said this, you've got to do it. Remember, you can't take it back." And so the king puts it off and puts it off. And then he finally says, "All right, well, I got to do this. I've got to do it because it's me on the line at this point too." Verse 16, "So the king gave the command, and they brought Daniel and cast him into the lion's den. But the king spoke, saying to Daniel, 'Your God, whom you serve continually, he will deliver you.'" And you get this, you can almost get this picture that, like, as they're taking him and, like, dragging him by to throw him in, the king grabs him by his sleeve and pulls him in, and he says, "Your God's going to save you. Just remember that." And you get just this faith from the king who's a heathen, who's a guy who does not believe in the God of Daniel. And sometimes the faith of the friend is what helps us in situations. Sometimes when our faith is wavering and we just look at a situation that we're in and it seems so dire and something else is, and God, I want to trust you and I want to know that this is your will and I want this to be so, but man, I just don't have the faith. And then somebody comes alongside you and says, "I have faith also." And man, isn't that something that just encourages? Your God, whom you serve continually, he will deliver you. Not he could deliver you. He should deliver you. He will deliver you. Then a stone was brought and laid on the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet ring and with the signet ring of his lords, that the purpose concerning Daniel might not be changed. So they roll a stone over. Let's look at some parallels here. So they roll a stone over. They seal it. The king signs it or seals it with his ring, and he has other people sign it with their signet ring, saying, unless we all agree to tamper with this and come back and reseal it, they were ensuring that the king wasn't going to come and pull Daniel out of there or anything like that. But we see a man who is wrongfully accused by his peers. We see a man who has a leader who is reluctant to exact punishment on this innocent man. And then we see a heavy stone placed and sealed to avoid any human intervention. Sound kind of familiar? There's some parallels here to the burial of Christ, the sentencing and the burial of Christ. He was an innocent man, accused by his peers, wrongfully accused, and then brought to justice by their terms for that. We see with Darius the same that we saw with Pilate. Pilate was like, "I just don't want to do this. Like, I don't feel good about this. I don't think this is right. I don't think you guys figure, I think you all," and that's when you see Pilate wash his hands and he says, "Listen, if you guys want to do this, this is on you." Darius didn't have that choice. Darius didn't have the choice of saying, "You know what? This is on you guys," because he knew it was on him. He knew that what he'd done, that the quick snap decision that he made because of his own ego, and like, oh man, that would be pretty great, not thinking about the repercussions for people that he actually cared about. So what was the den of lions? What did the lion den look like? Because we get an idea And I think part of the thing that we get is we get the VBS or the Sunday school idea of what a lion's den looked like. And but we also get that, which is trash in my opinion, is we see this young guy get thrown in with the lions. Daniel's 80 something years old when he gets put in with these lions. He's not a young man. We see, you know, you see the story of Daniel and Lion's Den, and you see like this cartoon guy that looks like he's probably in his early 20s, and it's like, no, that is not Daniel. The Lion's Den was usually a cave carved into the side of a hill or a cliff, and it was typically split into two separate chambers with a thick stone wall between them. So there was a big area and a little area. The little area was where they would essentially coax the lions to go into, for them to go in and clean up after they had thrown people in there. So to maintain that area, they had an area there, and it was probably an antechamber, as they would call it. So that stone probably rolled between two different entrances and the main entrance. So when they wanted to clean, they would chase all the lions in, and then they would close that small chamber, but it was probably the same stone that they rolled. So there's also a hole above the larger chamber so that people could watch people being punished and thrown into the den and then eaten alive. The lions were generally starved. They were voracious at this point. They wanted food, and the first thing that got thrown in there, which we'll see later happens, the first thing that gets thrown in there, they usually get torn to pieces pretty quick. I also found out, which I did not know this, that in some cultures, the unclaimed dead were also fed to them. So if you had like a vagrant or somebody that was unclaimed, that they would feed them to the lions too. So the lions are used to eating humans. This is their prey. This is what they distinguish as their food. And most of them are thrown in there from a young age, so that's all they know. So Daniel's thrown in. Daniel's the writer of this book, and we don't learn anything about his night in the lion's den. We don't have anything. Instead, he gets thrown in, and verse 18, we cut to the king in the palace, and there we are. We learn about what the king was doing that night, not what Daniel was doing, where he was at. Daniel was probably sitting in there in the corner praying, knowing Daniel. He was probably praying and praising God throughout the whole thing, because that's what we see Daniel do throughout the book so far. So he's thrown in the den. We cut to the king, and we see that the king is troubled. It says there that he spent the night fasting, which the word fasting there was not. He just decided not to eat. That wasn't a religious choice. He didn't have an appetite. And no musicians were brought in before him, and his sleep went from him. So the king is troubled. He's despairing. He's in his palace, sitting there, worrying about Daniel. He forgoes food. He forgoes entertainment. He forgoes sleep. And he sits there, and you get this. He's sitting there wringing his hands. He's the king, but at this moment, he is completely powerless. He probably has no idea what that feels like. He's completely powerless to help his friend. He's despairing over him. You can almost see him sitting in the window just watching, waiting for the sun to come up. Like, man, I really just want to go check on Daniel. Then he sees the first break of light over the horizon. It says the king arose very early in the morning and went in haste to the lion's den. First light, he's like, all right, time's up, I'm going. And he runs to the den, runs up to the top where the viewing part is, and he hollers down. And he says, Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to deliver you from the lions? He's like, man, I hope he's okay. He looks down in there and hollers, and you almost, it says with a lamenting voice, so you almost get to feeling like he's like, man, I'm not hearing him down there singing, how great is our God? There, obviously something happened to him. And then Daniel said to the king, O king, live forever. My God sent his angel and shut the lions' mouths so that they could not hurt me, because I was found innocent before him. And also, O king, I have done no wrong before you. Daniel knows he's innocent. Daniel knows that he's done nothing to the king, but he also knows that the king knows that as well. Now the king was exceedingly glad for him and commanded that they should take Daniel up out of the den. So Daniel was taken up out of the den, and no injury whatsoever was found on him, because he believed in his God. Again, we have parallels here with the story of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And they pull him out of the furnace, and there's nothing on him, no hair scorched, not even the smell of smoke on him. And Daniel's the same way. They pull him out, there's no injury, nothing at all. He's like, I'm a little hungry, haven't eaten all night. These lions have been sitting in here staring at me, but I had an angel keep their mouths shut. Verse 24, and the king gave the command, and they brought these men who had accused Daniel, and they cast them into the den of lions, them, their children, and their wives. And the lions overpowered them and broke all their bones in pieces before they ever came to the bottom of the den. Like I said, these lions were starved, and then they had food sitting right in front of them all night long, and they're like, oh, man, lions are probably hungry. And it says an angel of God closed their mouths. But it says there that them, their children, and their wives. And we think, well, why is that? Well, according to the Persian law, that was the punishment for traitors. If you had somebody that was a traitor, not only was the punishment exacted on them, but also their entire family. And we also see that with some of the stuff that Nebuchadnezzar had said, you know, I'm going to turn your house into an ash heap, and you and your family, all of them. And so we read this, and we think, man, that's a lot of people they tossed in there, 122 people that came against Daniel and their families. Like, that's a lot of people. Well, that's probably not the case. It probably wasn't all of them. It was probably the ones that the king knew were the ones really pushing for this. And it was likely just the other two governors, because they were both very involved, and a few other men that the king really felt were guilty of this plot. So then we see Darius praising God. And then there's this decree, and it says, then Darius wrote to all peoples, nations, and languages that dwell in all the earth, peace be multiplied to you. We see a lot of ties here with Nebuchadnezzar's decree or praise of God. I make a decree that in every dominion of my kingdom, men must tremble and fear before the God of Daniel. For he is the living God and steadfast forever. His kingdom is the one which shall not be destroyed, and his dominion shall endure to the end. He delivers and rescues, and he works signs and wonders in heaven and on earth, whom has delivered Daniel from the power of the lions. Again, it sounds almost verbatim what Nebuchadnezzar had said when his 7 years of going crazy were up. Verse Daniel continued to stay faithful to God. It says there, so this Daniel prospered in the reign of Darius and in the reign of Cyrus the Persian. He continued to stay faithful to God, so God stayed faithful to him. Very, very much under the respect of these men. So again, we see a lot of parallels here with his three friends from 60-something years ago that happened to them. And we see not only that God is sovereign, which we've talked about throughout this whole book, that God is sovereign, but what I really want us to understand after both of these stories is that, and I hinted at it earlier, we are immortal until God is done with his will through us. There's nothing that is going to stop God from using us for his will the way that he wants to. It doesn't matter if it's getting thrown into a furnace. It doesn't matter if it's getting thrown into a den full of starving lions. There is nothing that will stop God from doing what God is wanting to do with you. We hear that from people that have tried to commit suicide or people that have lived through near-death experiences, and they're like, man, like I knew that was the end. I should have died. There's absolutely no reason I should have made it through that. And why is that? Because God's not done with you. And those people tend to go on to be some of the loudest voices for God. So, I want us to all look at that. I want us to all take a step back, look back on our lives, and see where God has been faithful to us, and see where God has worked in our lives. Because hindsight's 20/20. You can look back on a situation and see it and think, yep, that was God. You don't see it in the time usually, but man, we can all look back on times in our lives and think that was a God thing. So with that, I will pray for us and we can get about our week. Father, thank you. Thank you for keeping us safe in your will. Father, just thank you for your word. Thank you for the examples in your word of the good and the bad of what you ask of us. So Father, help us all, each and every one of us, to just have the faith and the boldness of Daniel, and just the desire to just stay faithful to you no matter what the consequences and the costs. So Father, thank you. Thank you for this time. Thank you for the freedom to be able to gather together and just speak your word. And we ask all these things in your son's name. Amen. Thank you, guys.